The No Better Than Average podcast is a proud member of the Geek News Central Network. Like No Better Than Average? Check out the other great shows on the network. The Elder Divide, The Gadget Professor, Geek News Central, Health Tech Weekly, and The New Media Show. You can find our show and all these great shows through our website, nobettershow.com, or at geeknewscentral.com. If it's geek, we've got it.
Hard-hitting, intelligent discussion, painstakingly researched, thought-provoking opinions, and deep insight when you need it most. You'll get none of that here. Broadcasting from a secret location deep within America's heartland, Unapologetically Mediocre Studios presents the No Better Than Average podcast with your hosts, Jacob Cazell and Jeff Janey.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the No Better Than Average podcast. My name is Jeff Janey, and you are joining me for episode number 65. Along with me today is my co-host, my friend, my crutch, because I've been sick and I just haven't had a good week at work. Jacob, how's it going?
It is going. I somewhat have survived my remodeling project, but I feel like Mike Tyson went, I don't know, I'm not even going to say five rounds with me, 30 seconds with me, but like I'm going to say a Mike Tyson in like 96, like a prime Mike Tyson.
Okay,
I feel fair enough. Beat up. But I do have to say this, my boss at work, who is no longer Jeff, but is another, you know, desk jockey kind of guy. Jeff knows the guy. I'm not going to say he is like horribly out of shape, but I'm not going to say he's like a Mr. Olympian. And he came into the office this week just kind of cradling himself. And yeah, he thought it was a good idea to start doing that that insanity program from the people that bring you P90X. When P90X isn't hard enough, they make insanity, which apparently makes P90X look like, you know, like Jazzercise with Barney the Dinosaur. And he could barely like lift his arm. So
yeah, that's great.
I'm like, why do you jump right into that when you're not in shape?
No, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Well, you know, I shaved. I know this is a audio only podcast, but I no longer look like Santa Claus. I look like the baby face that God intended.
Hairless and, Jeff, we're calling him.
And I got my skull cap on because I'm cold. I'm always freaking cold.
Yeah.
Here's a newsflash for you folks. When you lose nearly 50 pounds, your body is cold all the freaking time.
So, okay, interesting point. Get your iron levels checked, because being cold all the time can actually be a symptom of iron deficiency.
Okay, well, I'll have to take a look at that. So anyway, I've been wearing a beanie, or I guess skull cap, whatever you want to call it, on. And it's a good problem to have. The other problem I have is all my coats are way too big.
Don't fit anymore. Yeah.
But, you know.
That's good. Again,
to have, right?
But good problem to have, not a bad problem.
No. So anyway, tech. Let me do the beginning parts. Patreon, you know what to do. It's patreon.com/nobettershow. If you want to help us out, great. If not, great too. We get it. I don't want to belabor it too much, you know. No, we're not getting rich here, and that's okay.
Darn it, why not? Where are those lottery winners that are supposed to be giving us, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of dollars?
I don't know. I don't think it worked out for any of our listeners.
Darn
or
it.
They've gone on to bigger and better things, which honestly can't blame them. If you want to call in and tell us how you've gone on to bigger and better things, feel free to do so. 317-643-1212. Always glad to hear from you. We are a day late and a dollar short, and we will be issuing refunds to all of those people who don't pay us.
Yes, we guarantee that you get content or double none of your money back.
That's right.
Actually, technically, this show is still going to go out on Tuesday, so we're just a morning short.
Okay, we're just a morning short. That's okay.
Yeah, stupid life getting in the stupid way.
Yeah, it was my fault, and I will take full responsibility for it. And
yeah, don't get sick again, Jeff.
I'm
gosh,
sorry. You know, I had a rough week, and yeah. Anyway, you want to jump in, Jacob?
I will. So
You've got a lot more to talk about than me, and that's okay, because honestly, I think people like that.
Well, I don't know about that. I guess since it's breaking news, since we are delaying the release of this episode, we can actually cover breaking news. Those of you who may or may not have heard Apple's results call. So, interestingly,
they didn't make more money than last year,
but they still made a just gobsmacking amount of money. So, 72 or $76 billion in revenue.
And it was what, 2.2 million less?
Yeah. And so, this is why I am not a rich mogul investor, because apparently Wall Street has lost its dang mind over this paltry, like, 0.2 million less, yeah, and has been like beating them up. And I heard on the radio this morning, actually, in anticipation of the results call, that Apple stock is down something, was as of this morning anyway, down something like 12% since October on rumors that their year-over-year would be abysmal. And apparently Wall Street has a funny definition of abysmal. Well,
the problem with Wall Street is they always expect you to grow, and there does come a point that you can't grow. There's nowhere else to go.
No.
I mean, where are they going to sell $850 phones that they haven't already sold $850 phones? The answer is nowhere.
Yeah. I mean, they're saturating China. I mean, they've saturated America.
Like, you know, when you say saturated China, I mean, not even 1% of the people in China have iPhones. But that being said, not more than 1% of China can afford an iPhone. They're expensive devices. And, you know, yes, you want to get into China. Yes, you want to get into India. But how many people can really afford that kind of money?
Well, you know, it's still crazy to me. So, yes, they slipped a little. They missed expectations. They still made 70-some billion dollars.
Yeah, and I heard some interesting stuff that, you know, apparently the iPhone sales were way down, but they're saying that it's quite possible that even though they don't report individually, that Watch and Apple TV revenues were extremely higher than they expected.
Interesting. I had not heard that news.
So, yeah, I mean, the year-over-year sales on the phones went down more than the revenue went down. So they're saying that something had to have picked up
propping
that difference.
It up. Yeah.
And they're projecting that it could possibly be the Watch and the Apple TV, which, you know, I don't know. I think it's watch bands, personally, because quite honestly, I mean,
yeah, $2 watch band that they're selling for $49.95.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, a $100 watch band that they're selling for $500. And I mean, I don't know, but yeah.
Well, you know, and the other thing that surprised me is I heard that they are now sitting on a $200 billion war chest. They now have $200 billion in cash.
You just start naming companies that they could buy with cash.
Like everything. So $203 billion cash.
Yeah.
And apparently it's been as high as almost $206 billion. Just, you know, sitting around. Like, I can't even fathom that. And so Wall Street is just beating them up. And I feel like they're going to be just fine.
Yeah, so Walt Disney, Walt Disney Company, so DIS on the New York Stock Exchange, right?
Mm-hmm.
They own Disney, obviously, ESPN, ABC. Their market cap is $157 billion.
Apple could buy them and have change.
With cash. They could write a check. They could be like, Disney, here you go. Here's a check.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's crazy.
And that is why, like I said, I am not a mogul, because it doesn't make any sense to me that the street has responded the way it has on this news. And the other thing I think is interesting is I've started to see more rumors swirling about a possible announcement of a new smaller iPhone, possibly called the iPhone 5 SE, which is a kind of a dumb name, I think. But
yeah,
it's going to potentially use the A8 chip, and it's going to be as powerful as at least the iPhone 6. I don't think they're saying it's going to be as powerful as the S edition, but it's going to be the smaller form factor, but sure, with upgraded internals and Apple Pay and all of those things. And, you know, everybody for so long was saying, gosh, Apple is just screwing up by not having a larger phone. Apple brought out larger phones. Mm-hmm. And now, a year and a half later, people are going, oh, come on, Apple, how come you don't have a small phone?
Well, what? I mean, I think that there is something to be said that there are people that have not upgraded.
But is it because of the, I mean, is it a substantial percentage of people that haven't upgraded because of the size?
Yeah, I think so. Honestly, I do.
My aged eyes just can't do a 4-inch screen anymore.
The problem is that we're old. So I'm not sure that that's for us.
Maybe.
Like, I know, you know, I
don't know. My wife's mom still rocks a 4S because she likes the size.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know.
There are people, but I just wonder, you know, how many different sizes are you going to end up coming out with? I mean, if they really do come out with a 4-inch. And I'm still interested to see, you know, are we going to see a second version of a watch?
Well, you know, it'll be interesting because, you know, one of the things I think a lot of Apple scholars point to Apple's near demise in the 90s, the early 90s, is... Oh, yeah. I mean, they had so many models and so many different combinations and variations, and you could get an LC and a Performa and an SE. And I mean, there were a half dozen or more different families of Macs, and then there were all sorts of different options. And you know, one of the things that I don't know if he gets as much credit for as other things, but Jobs came in and cut the SKUs to the bone and said, we have a computer.
There is a difference between a company that was like Apple that was struggling, and there's something to be said for cutting SKUs back in that instance, but it's not like Apple's like hurting for anything.
Oh, no.
And obviously if they have three different sizes of phones, that's still about what, a tenth of what Samsung has?
Yeah, probably. It is a trend in a different direction been their MO for, you know, 10 years.
About it, I mean, they have MacBooks, they have MacBook Pros, they have MacBook Airs.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a little odd in and of itself too, right?
Well, you know, I certainly see the differentiation between a MacBook Air and a MacBook Pro, but I find it to be a much finer delineation between a MacBook Air and the MacBook. Like, where do you come in and say, well, a MacBook's for me, but not an Air or vice versa? And, you know, I actually saw...
Well, now you've got the iPad Pro, which I think also kind of, you know, I mean, it is a different device, but it is in competition, I would say, at least with the Air, wouldn't you?
Well, I'll say this. I actually saw my first iPad Pro in the wild today in a meeting, and the person was using it as a note-taking device with the pen. And it was basically doing full duty as a legal pad. Mm-hmm. And I had just a minute after the meeting to talk to him about it, and was asking, you know, what they thought. And of course, they're a big Apple advocate. They had the watch and the iPhone and the iPad. And he was saying that the battery life was ridiculous. Like, he can take it off the charger in the morning, use it all day long, goes to meetings, you know, takes notes on it, uses it as a, you know, mobile email device. Basically, it is a laptop for him almost. And he said, you know, I get home and, you know, it's 30-40% battery still. And I could never do that with a laptop. So, I mean, he's like, I get 12-14 hours out of it sometimes. Yeah, so, that's impressive. And I mean, it looked just like a laptop sitting there. If you didn't know it was an iPad Pro, you wouldn't know. It was definitely sexy. I'm not going to say that my wallet didn't get a little jealous. It was pretty cool.
Was there a great disturbance in the force?
There would have been a great disturbance in the force if I buy one, because my wife will kick my butt. But yeah, that's not to say I don't lust after one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that was interesting. Apple's big news, even though they did well, not quite as well enough, and Wall Street is punishing them for it. Stupid Wall Street. I've got an interesting one I want to talk about for a second, and that is sort of the disconnect of stuff that's out there, people that are selling stuff that's out there, and what you can actually get. So in our fair city, we have an annual thing called the Home Show. I'm sure other fair cities have similar things, but it's basically a two-week-long excuse for vendors who sell all kinds of crap to pile together at our fairgrounds and charge you $12 to walk around and look at all of their stuff.
I have a question.
Yes.
We also went on Saturday.
Okay.
So, did you pay to go to that?
I did. We bought tickets to go to the home show.
God.
Where do you get free tickets?
So, you know, free tickets is maybe a rough exaggeration, because you know the big pavilion that we built and stuff in our backyard?
Right.
They're a vendor there.
Oh, and they send us a postcard or something.
they send us a postcard every year saying, you know, here's two, you know, use this for two free entrances.
And so if I buy a $10,000 gazebo, I'll get $22 worth of tickets to go to the home show.
But what's interesting is, like, every year when we get that, we're like, yeah, we'll go because, you know, all you have to do is pay for parking and it's right. $5 and we go and we walk around. And I think, God, if I would have paid, you know, $30 for me and my wife to get into this, I would feel so ripped off because it is just not – I don't know. Maybe
– Well, you know,
it's just not – I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. It doesn't do anything for me at all.
As I have mentioned in podcasts past, my wife and I are fans of DIY and HGTV. And, you know, frankly, we like to go and just look at things and get ideas. And, you know, like we're looking at doing something with the kitchen. Obviously, we are not planning on doing a tear out and replace. But, you know, so we actually talked to several vendors that refinish cabinets and got some information about that. And, you know, we're looking at different countertop options. And so sure. I think there's value in at least having a bunch of that stuff in one place where you can kind of walk around and see what's out there. What I thought was really odd, and I don't know if you noticed this, Jeff, but
I saw the same thing.
So well, there were like 7 or 8 DirecTV vendors there. Yeah, and they were all hounding you. Who do you use for TV? Who do you use for TV?
And I don't know if you noticed. I mean, there were 7 or 8 different Xfinity booths, too.
There were multiple Xfinity booths, and there were at least 2 or 3 Dish Network booths that I saw.
Absolutely.
And I'm like, dude, does this work? Because I get the same thing at Sam's Club. I get the same thing at Costco, sure. where the guys hound you for switching. And does that strategy work for these companies?
Yes,
it must.
Obviously it does. And I don't know, we've kind of felt the same thing with security companies. Do you have a security system at home? Do you have a security system at home? And it's like, yeah, I do, and I'm fine. Leave me alone.
I didn't get hounded this year. There was a company there last year, and I actually made the mistake of stopping momentarily outside of their booth. And the guy happened to notice me and asked if I had a security system, and I said I did not. I had a Rottweiler, and he chuckled. But their security system had some home automation stuff, and I was asking some questions about it. And then he wouldn't let it go. And he was like, oh, come on, we just let us send a sales guy out there. He'll give you a free quote. And I'm like, no, I'm good. He actually pulled the line on me. Well, you must not care about your family then. And yeah, I'm like, oh, dude, yeah. F you. I am out. Like, if you had any chance of getting me to talk to you, you just ruined it right there.
Well, I just feel like mostly what I've feel like in those things is, I don't know, everyone would, oh, you can win this for free. Just give us all your information.
You want to win $10,000 Windows? No, I don't.
No, I don't.
Yeah. So the thing I want to talk about, there was a vendor there, and apparently Jeff has saw it too, called
I just laughed.
OMG TV. And so I walked by, and there were 2 reasonably attractive salesish people, and one was demoing it for some other poor schlub, and I happened to stop and was curious as to what it was, and this lass came over and, you know, immediately started to engage me and asked me what I did for television, and, you know, I said that I had cable, and I also have Netflix, and I have Amazon Prime, and she said, you know, oh, well, with this solution, you can get everything, you can get all movies, you can get live TV, and you don't have to pay anything. And I said, well, you know, how is it different than like a Netflix? She's like, well, because you have to pay for Netflix. You don't have to pay for this. And I'm like, okay, well, so you're telling me I can get live TV? Yeah, you can get live TV, anything live TV. And okay, and I can get movies. Yeah, you can get any movie you want. I'm like, how are you doing that? Any movie I want. Like, I could go home and with this box, I could watch The Avengers. Yeah, you could watch any movie. I'm like, yeah, that's probably not legal. She's no, it's totally legal because we don't let you download it. We're just streaming it. I'm like, yeah, that's still not legal. And she would not relent and declined to show me actual live TV. And so I kind of went, yeah, thanks for your time, and walked off. And so I got home and did a little Googling on this thing. And apparently it's a company that makes a little box that is actually just a Raspberry Pi computer inside of a case. And it is running Kodi, which is the rebranded XBMC project. And you look at their website, and they make no mention whatsoever of giving you movies and live TV and none of this stuff. It's basically just like You can stream YouTube videos and, you know, any content that's out there like Pandora and like the BBC streaming. It lets you hook up and play it. And I was really sort of intrigued at how they were just blatantly lying to people, and people were buying these little boxes. I don't know what your experience was, if you even talked to them, Jeff.
I didn't talk to them because I just laughed. Because, you know what? I'm sure there's probably software on there that you can get, and you could stream all those movies just like they said, and live TV just like they said, by stealing it.
Well,
I can steal stuff. Of course I could steal stuff. That exists on the internet. You do a little Googling and you'll be able to figure out how to do that on your very own without having to buy this little box. But yeah, here's the thing, folks. Nothing, you don't get anything for nothing. I just laughed.
Well, I thought it was interesting that, and I don't necessarily fault this gal because she probably was given.
Oh no, she was given
an hour of training about what this was. I'm sure she had no idea what she was saying, because at one point she was trying to tell me that they had been cleared by the FCC for their streaming, and I'm like, yeah, the FCC doesn't cover that. Like, the FCC probably certified the box that it doesn't cause interference, but the FCC doesn't certify for streaming. And obviously she did not want to be educated, and you know, it's kind of one of those you can try and teach a pig arithmetic, but all it does is frustrate you and annoy the pig. She was trying to tell me that because it's streaming and not downloading, it's completely legal and I don't have to go find torrents and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, that's still not legal, and you're miseducating people, and this should not be allowed.
How that worked for them.
Yeah.
Because all they were doing was streaming too, but it didn't work too well for them.
So I thought that was an interesting thing. So if you see one of these booths out there, run away. It's nothing you can't do yourself if you're interested.
If you go to any of these shows, just don't stop at any of these.
pretty much.
Just pretty much, like, everything is such a, like, there's so much scam stuff there.
Yeah, it's very huckstery.
This massage, electric massage, and it'll cure everything.
I sat in one of those massage chairs last year, and it was pretty darn nice. It was also $5,000.
I was going to say, I'm sure it was, but it's just, no.
Well, that is my rant about in uneducated technology people and the masses. Hey, if you've got friends on Facebook, they don't care about you. a new
unless it's me, I care.
Jeff cares.
If I'm your friend on Facebook, I care.
He doesn't really.
No, I really
asterisk.
Do.
I don't care. So you may
care,
have,
don't care. Hashtag.
You may have heard of a thing called Dunbar's number, and what it is it was a thing it came up with by social anthropologist Robin Dunbar, who through various studies
he just made it up
through various studies that he did, he kind of figured out that people tend to only be able to maintain about 150 relationships, and
that's an average, right?
So that's an average.
There's got to be someone out there that can maintain 300 stable relationships, because I have about two.
Okay, but on average, you can only meaningfully engage with about 150 people. And so his research has actually been used far and wide, and companies have used it to optimize the size of departments where, you know, they try and keep departments under that magic number so that, in theory, you can, if not know everyone well, at least as you walk around the department, you know, oh, hey, Carl, hey, Joe, you know everybody at least enough to know their name, which gets hard when you start having groups above that. Anyway, so Robin Dunbar just analyzed a UK study of 3,300 Facebook users and found out that this Dunbar's number concept apparently holds on social media as well. And he said the results of the study, on average, people only had about 150 followers, and that they could only count on 4.1 of them during an emotional crisis and only 13.6 ever expressed sympathy. Having a lot more than 150 followers doesn't really change those numbers much. Heavy users of online social media don't necessarily have larger offline social networks than casual users. Age gap is part of it. Younger people tend to have larger online networks, as older folks tend to have more real-world network face-to-face networks. But yeah, you your friends, all those thousands of people that you have on Facebook, they don't care. When you post horrible things that have happened to you, only a small little percentage of them give any crap at all.
Do you ever post on Facebook horrible crap that happens to you? Because
I don't, but like, I have lots of people that are somehow connected to me that do. Apparently that is a place to just air your dirty laundry.
Because like, I see those things and it just makes, I'm one of those people who don't care. I see that and I just think, I don't want that.
Is it wrong when someone posts, "I have cancer," to like it? Like, that seems like that's the wrong thing to do. But
I mean, you know, like, I feel for people who have loss and stuff in their lives, but I don't understand the need to post that on, I don't know.
Yeah.
I do not maintain 150 healthy relationships. I mean, I have empathy for people.
The word you're looking for is you are not empathetic.
No, I'm not. I'm not. And I don't look for empathy from other people either. So maybe there's something broken in me. I think it's called sociopath or something. I think that's what people have told me.
Yeah, I don't know. I definitely use Facebook to advertise the best part of my life and not so much the worst part.
Yeah, exactly. I want positive stuff on Facebook.
I want people to look at me and be like, "Dang, that guy's got an awesome life," even though I don't.
Yeah, no, I don't think anyone looks at me and thinks that. But that I don't go searching. Like, I feel like people go on Facebook and they're just begging for, feel sorry for me.
Oh,
and
yeah, I just absolutely.
I don't understand that. I like people that are positive. And we, I will say, we have some listeners that are really positive people. And I really do enjoy seeing some of the stuff that some of our folks post on social media. So
absolutely.
I will say that. We got some positive folks out there. And that's good because, you know, I just – there's enough negatives. It's the same reason I don't watch the news. people don't believe me when I say that. I know you believe me when I say that because you know me and you've known me long enough to know that I'm not lying. I don't watch the news. I don't want to know because there's nothing good about watching the news. It's just depressing and people are killing other people and that's all they talk about.
So you're not going to tune in for all the caucusing next week?
Could give a caucus less. I will tell you, I could really not care even a little bit at all. None.
I'm still a little bit addicted to the news. I apparently grasp onto too much negativity. And I will say that the people who tend to be the most negative on Facebook are also the ones who scream the most about not wanting any drama in their lives. Yeah. So go figure.
I don't want any drama in my life. And if you don't like this, then I hate you.
Hey, everybody. I am a huge proponent of multi-factor authentication. I have said high and low about using two-factor everywhere you can and using authy.com. And I just learned something. Amazon now supports two-factor authentication for logging in. I was just reading an article recently about how apparently easy it is to socially engineer Amazon's customer service to gain access to accounts that aren't yours. There was an incident of a guy getting some emails from Amazon saying, "We hope that our support chat solved your issue." And he thought to himself, "What issue?" And contacted Amazon support and asked for chat transcripts where he found someone posing as him, giving not even his real address, was able to game Amazon's customer service into getting his real address and then being able to use that to log in and change all sorts of information and place orders on his behalf and all of that fun stuff. And the article mentioned that you can turn on two-factor authentication for Amazon, which I didn't know that they did. So I went, I turned it on, and it works like a charm. It plays nice with Authy or whatever two-factor authentication tool you want to use. So if you are an Amazon nut like Jeff and I are, here is what you need to do. Go to Amazon, log in. Go to your accounts, and then you will see an option, change account settings. You want to click on that, and then down towards the bottom of that screen, there is advanced security settings, and you want to click on that, and then it says get started using two-step verification, and you can have it send a text message to verify you every time you log in. You can use an app, like I said, like Authy, and what's really nice is it's also smart enough to know, you can tell it, "I log in all the time on this browser, my home computer or my work computer, so I want you to remember this," and it won't pester you all the time. And Amazon Amazon's customer support is supposed to then ask for a two-factor authentication anytime you initiate a chat request. So it hopefully should make it, if not impossible, at least very, very difficult for someone to pose as you and potentially take advantage of your Amazon account and charge up all kinds of stuff and all those nasty things that hacker-type people do. So check it out if you have not already turned it on. Didn't even know about it, maybe like me. I am really stoked to see that. That's how you know you're a nerd. You get excited about multi-factor authentication. So have you turned it on yet, Jeff?
I have not.
Oh, you need to go do it. Otherwise, after this podcast, I am going to go pose as you, and I am going to get on Amazon and buy me some nice stuff. That's going to happen.
That's great.
Yeah. Hey, I remember a couple of episodes back. I don't remember if it was on our science episode or if it was one right after that. There was some talk about possibly the speed of light not being the speed of light. And you're like, well, maybe everybody's wrong. And guess what, Jeff? Maybe everybody is wrong.
Yeah, I did mention that maybe the speed of light isn't as fast as you could possibly go. And guess what?
So some CERN scientists.
Who has 2,000 was correct?
Nobody can say you're correct yet.
I think that it's probably a pretty good chance that I'm correct. I just want to point that out.
There are some CERN scientists who are certainly siding with you. They're calling it the Jeff speed of light. I don't know what they're calling it, but I thought this was really interesting. So researchers have been working on this for over 3 years now. So it's not just like some, hey, this is weird. It seems to be breaking these rules of physics. They've been studying it for a while, scratching their scientific heads and going, huh. So researchers from CERN have been taking measurements over the last 3 years, and they are showing neutrinos pumped out of their facilities in Geneva are arriving in Gran Sasso, Italy, 60 nanoseconds faster than light would have done. The lead researcher is Antonio Erradiato, I believe, who said, quote, "We have high confidence in our results. We have checked and rechecked for anything that could distort our measurements, but we have found nothing. Now we want colleagues to check them independently." So if confirmed, this discovery would undermine Al Einstein's 1905 theory of special relativity, which says that the speed of light is a constant and that nothing in the universe can travel faster. I think that if it is true and multiple sources confirm it, it actually is going to get physicists excited as opposed to them going, oh, man, because, I don't know what the implications of it are, but I know physicists tend to get excited when things that they thought were correct turn out to not be correct. But apparently they fired a total of 15,000 beams of neutrino over this 3 year period from CERN in Geneva to Gran Sasso, which is apparently about 500 miles away, 730 kilometers for all the rest of the world. And they were picked up by giant detectors. Light would have covered the distance in 2.4 thousandths of a second, but the neutrinos took only 60 nanoseconds or 60 billionths of a second, less than the light beam would have taken. So I don't know what this means other than maybe Jeff is right, but there might be big news on the horizon in the world of science.
Yeah, I just think, anytime we think we've got it all figured out, we usually don't. I just, I think that's a pretty good good assumption.
Yeah. I don't really know what that means. I think they have shown it to be pretty constant over and over again. So there must be some applications where you can use 186,000 miles per second and be, accurate enough. But I'm sure that when you start to get into some more esoteric areas of physics, maybe it makes a difference. And we were talking about, what was it, supernovas, I think, wasn't it, where the neutrino pulse got here faster than they predicted?
Yes.
Yeah, so again, those freaky neutrinos. And actually, maybe they'll just find out that neutrinos behave completely differently than anything else, because they're kind of weird anyway.
Yeah.
We had multiple listeners write in to tell us about this one.
This is,
was that a good year or a bad year?
I think it's a meh year because, at first when I saw this, I was really excited, and then I'm not now.
So
because you know what? I mean, nostalgia, yeah, this is cool, but when you really go, like, actually play any of these things, it just doesn't hold up. Like, it holds your interest for, like, well, go ahead, let's talk about
what. Okay, I was going to say, let's tell these poor people who don't know what we're talking about what we're talking about, because they're probably like, oh, what is it? Come on, tell us. So, Atari Classics, which who knew Atari was even still an organization, is coming to Steam. They are going to, Atari itself is going to release 100 classic games in a single package for Steam called Atari Vault. And it's supposed to happen sometime this spring of 2016. So far, the only news I was able to find says that they promised to include Asteroids, Centipede, Missile Command, Tempest, and Warlords in a package that also includes online multiplayer and Steam leaderboard support. I don't know how some of those games would work with multiplayer. Atari's press release also promises, quote, precision control via the Steam controller, which looking online looks like it'll set you back around $50 if you want one of those. The article mentioned that a lot of the games like Centipede uses a trackball, and not very many PCs have access to one today, but apparently the Steam controller can mimic the feel of a trackball quite well. Atari has also not said which versions of the games it's going to be, whether it's going to be the arcade version, the home version, or some other remake, but they will be demoing this at PAX South later this month in San Antonio. And like Jeff said, I am a huge fan of nostalgia. I mean, I loved like Ready Player One and that kind of stuff, but I wonder if you would really get a lot of like enjoyable replay out of this. Like, I feel like you'd play it once and be like, oh yeah, man, remember when I used to play this in the arcade?
Yeah.
And then you'd never touch it again.
Yeah. I kind of feel like the replayability there is not there. Like, it would be cool for a short amount of time, and then you'd be like, yeah, this is really, really boring.
I mean, if the price was right, and I feel like the price is right at about $9.99.
I feel like the price is right at about free.
It's not going to be free. Not if they can squeeze $29 or $39 out of, you know, 40-year-olds who want nostalgia.
They will, but I mean, it's just I went and found an emulator for Centipede, and I was using my trackpad on my MacBook.
It was probably actually not so good.
It didn't translate too bad. I mean, better than trying to use keys.
But you need that big, like heavy, like pool ball size trackball.
I understand what you're saying, but it didn't translate horribly, but and I enjoyed it for the first 3 or 4 games, and then I was like, I'm good.
I want some Call of Duty.
Yeah, how about I go play Fallout 4 now?
Yeah,
the
other thing is the press release did not mention which Steam platforms it's going to support, but I am going to keep my fingers crossed that it includes OS X, in not just Windows, you know, just in case.
You know, you can find emulators of all those games. Illegally, probably, but, you know, I'm just saying.
I kind of feel like I'm at the point in my life where I would pay $10 to not break a law and get sued over something stupid because I was stupid. I'm just, yeah, I don't know.
I hear you.
I mean, I like Asteroids. I like Centipede. I'm not a big Tempest fan. Robotron 2012, something like that. I like that. That would be hard. You'd need two joysticks for that. But yeah, I don't know. I haven't written it off yet.
At first, when I saw it, I was like, oh, this is awesome. Gosh, I cannot. And then I was like, well, yeah, maybe not.
I mean, I've cooled, but not like I haven't Jeff cooled. Like, yeah, I'm not quite there.
Yeah, I'm way cool on that one.
Robotron 2084. That's what I was looking for. God, I
so
love
what do
that
you think
game.
About Netflix trying to crack down on their geographic content restrictions?
You know, as someone who doesn't try and get around the geographic content restrictions, it doesn't bother me so much. It's interesting. They have service in 190 countries, I was reading, which I think is just about all the countries. I don't know how many countries there are, but 190 seems to be a good percentage of them.
Some countries, they have two shows. Like, that's it.
Probably. Like who wants to win a goat? It's like the Kazakhstan. Well, like
I saw House of Cards. House of Cards is only available in like 3 countries.
Oh, really? Now, that's interesting because they own that. Lock and stock.
Well,
so I'm surprised,
actually. So that was what was interesting when I was reading about it, is that part of the deal that made that happen was that Sony actually owns the distribution rights in almost every country except for the US, Great Britain, and like Australia.
Really? I did not know that.
And so Netflix only shows House of Cards in those. Yeah, I keep Game of Thrones, House of Cards, it's all the same.
Star Trek, Star Wars, you know, whatever.
Whatever. That's right.
May the midichlorians be with you.
Yeah. Oh, that's not nice. It's not nice
live,
at all.
Live long in Jedi? Something like that. There are 196 countries, by the way. So 190 is almost all of them.
It's pretty darn close, yeah. Anyway, I obviously, you know, us living in the great country of Merca, we don't really have this problem where we have to pretend like we're in a different country to get stuff. Unless you want to watch BBC, but that's a totally different thing. But, you know, I think it's interesting, and I've heard a lot of people think that this is really going to hurt Netflix, like, in the long run.
I mean, but Netflix has to enforce. So what we're talking about too is if you live in, say, Europe and you can't get your BoJack Horseman. I have no idea if you can or. Oh, and speaking of Netflix, I just started watching a new one called F is for Family. It's a animated Netflix original with Bill Burr. So if you like his sort of I'm mad at everything style of humor, I recommend checking it out. It is it definitely hits those nostalgia buttons. It's like it's supposed to be set in like 1976, and yeah, it definitely kind of feels like that. So give that a look, Netflix subscribers. But you know, if you're over in a country where you can't get that, you can connect to a VPN in America, and Netflix will go, oh hey, you're in America, so here's your stream, and you can watch it. So they are going to implement new technology that supposedly will identify that you are in fact not in Merca and block your access to those streams. They are not saying how they are going to do that, only that they have identified ways of doing it. We have ways of stopping your streaming, and they're going to block you out. But legally they're supposed to block you out. So I mean, is it going to hurt them? You know, in the sense that they may lose some subscribers over it, but is it going to be a material amount of subscribers?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I find it very interesting because, you know, ultimately, I think a lot of people do it is using VPNs, right?
Right. That's the big way now.
But I guess my question is are there legitimate uses for using VPNs that are going to be, you know, taken away because they're trying to, you know, protect the content? Because, you know, I know a lot of people who anytime they use a you know, a public Wi-Fi, they pay and use a VPN.
Yeah.
Because they want to protect their, you know, traffic. And is this going to be a problem?
Well, you know, interestingly, a few years ago, I want to say maybe the end of 2012-ish, maybe 2013, there was the big brouhaha that Netflix signed a deal with Comcast, and they paid Comcast some amount of money to not fudge up all of Netflix streams. And I was both a Comcast and Netflix customer during all of that turmoil. And Netflix was almost unusable. I mean, you could not get an HD stream out. I mean, it was bad for 4 or 5 months. And then all of a sudden, they signed this deal with Comcast. Comcast got paid by Netflix, and miraculously, everything was HD and worked lickety-split, and there was no buffering. And I remember reading some articles after all of that happened where people were doing tests. And basically, if they were on Comcast and they were monitoring their bandwidth, they were getting, you know, like a megabit, 1.2 megabit to Netflix. And then on the same connection, they would connect through a VPN proxy that was not so basically Comcast couldn't see what was happening. And then they were all of a sudden getting, you know, like 8 megabit, 10 megabit, 15 megabit. So, I mean, in that case, that would be a legitimate use if you were a Comcast customer during this squabble that Comcast had with Netflix, where they literally were throttling and making it so that it was almost unusable. You're paying Comcast, you're paying Netflix, but you can't really use the service. In that case, using a VPN would get you around it. And Netflix did say that if you're not doing anything you shouldn't be doing as far as violating geographic restrictions, this should not impact you at all. So I'm curious in if that language means that if you're in America using a VPN, like you said, Jeff, you're in a coffee shop and you want to be extra careful and connecting to a VPN that you pay for, in theory, Netflix is saying, well, we'll know that you're in America and you'll be fine. They're just looking for, you know, you're in America trying to access European content or vice versa, or you know, you want to be in, you're traveling and you're in Shanghai and you want to access, and we'll know that and we'll be able to shut that down. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Not too up on that, and they haven't really released that many details.
Hey, not that I want to deprive people of all our insight and stuff, but can we do a little shorter episode tonight?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm all of a sudden getting bombarded with work-related issues and need to do some testing. So I hate to come on and say I need to go, but I kind of need to go.
Stupid life getting in the way.
And that's one of the reasons we were late too. So anyway, I apologize, folks. But
absolutely. Well, I tell you what, Jeff, why don't you tell these fine people what it is that you love, and then we will let you go so that you can go and save the world.
Save the cheerleader. I tell you what I love, and I kind of hinted at it earlier, but I got a new coat, a Columbia 3-in-1 system that actually fits me well now.
I have some Columbia jackets that are nice, but I do not know what the 3-in-1 system is.
So it's just basically, it's just a layered type system that, you know, all zips together. So the outside is like a, you know, raincoaty type shell, but it also has a like fleece jacket on the inside that you can unzip and you could wear them all together, or you could wear them separate or whatever. But, you know, it's basically just a typical winter coat, but it's the first Columbia that I've ever bought. I normally just buy some cheap whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps me warm and I like it, and it's nice. So, and I got it cheap because it was on clearance, because you know, it's
it's almost the end of winter,
right?
Although tell that to those poor people on the East Coast.
Yeah, well, it's still gonna be plenty cold here. So and the problem I had was not that my old coat was not warm. It was that when your coat is too big, the wind just whips right up underneath it, and it makes freezing cold. So, I cannot bestow the happiness that I have on my new warm coat that keeps me warm.
Very cool. Yay. The Columbia 3-in-1. I'll have to check that out.
They make different ones. That. There's like the Timberline. They have 15 different named ones. And it just kind of depends. Like, I didn't get the top of the line one that will protect you down to negative 450 degrees, because we live in Indiana and it's not really that cold here. They make various different levels, and
I want the one that lets me be zambonied into the ice, like on that commercial. Which one is that one?
I don't know.
That's the one I need.
But I will tell you this, and what's interesting, I know a lot of people are really, like, North Face seems to be the really in popular thing. Because I work at a company now where people are hip and cool and all that stuff. And that seems to be the big brand right now is North Face. And I will tell you that, oh my God, North Face is expensive.
Like, yeah, I know of the brand, Wowzer. But I couldn't tell you anything else about Wowzer. It.
Because like I had never bought Columbia because they were always a little pricey for me, and then I realized Columbia is not pricey. Columbia is a bargain
compared to North Face.
So anyway, just
do we have an REI here? Because I think they sell all that kind of stuff, don't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to check that out. I've never been REI to REI.
Does Dick's sells all those? yeah. Dick's Sporting Goods.
Nice.
I'm very, very happy with what I got, and it's waterproof and all that stuff. And, you know, depending on what you need, I mean, they sell different, you know, basically what kind of temperature it can handle is variable depending on where you live. So they make some that have like the tin foil stuff on the inside. I mean, yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Space blankets. I need to get a pair of Columbia boots then, because my feet are always cold now.
Mine too.
I need better boots.
I have the same problem. Yeah. Anyway,
just start going and eat a bunch of candy, gain that weight back. It's like putting a blanket
get
back
on. Layer of blubber back on me. That's right. Keep you warm.
Think how good you'll feel come July.
That's true.
There you go.
Well, I'm going to let you go. Bye, everybody. What Jacob loves, go yay. Sorry.
I will wrap it up and take him home, Jeff. You go save the world.
I'll talk to you later, man.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
All right, everybody. So here is what I love. When it rains, it pours. And so I am in the middle of a home renovation, as I talked about on the last show, which has darn near killed me. Here's the thing. When you work at a desk, don't just think you can take a week off and do hard manual labor that involves crawling around in attics and swinging hammers, because it will literally make you feel like you have gone, I don't know, 30 seconds with Mike Tyson in his prime. I can barely move, but there it is. So as I was hauling things in and out of the garage last week, my garage door opener decides, bah, it's time to break and go away and stop working. Yes, it died, so had to replace it and try to do some homework and find one that I thought was going to work. And I ended up finding one by Chamberlain. I bought it at a big box retailer, so from what I was reading, the model will change a little bit depending on where you go and get it, but you can get the equivalent model on Amazon. You can get it at Lowe's. You can get it at Home Depot. I believe you can get it at Menards too, but to any big box retailer. And so at Lowe's, it's the 9000 WF model. But what it is it's a 1.25 horsepower motor. It has a battery backup. It has a keypad. It comes with a keypad for the outside of your garage door. Obviously, it comes with two remotes, and it comes with a smart brain that has a timer on it, so it can do cool things like automatically close the garage door like 1 minute, 5 minutes, or 10 minutes after you open it. So if you are scatterbrained like me, you can leave and not worry about forgetting to close the door because it'll shut itself. It's got a motion detector, which is kind of cool. So when you come out into the garage, it'll turn the light on automatically for you. All that fun stuff. But the coolest thing is it has built-in Wi-Fi, and it works with Chamberlain's MyQ system. So once you get it installed, you basically connect to it. You push a button on it, and it turns on its internal Wi-Fi. You connect to it with your smartphone and go to a web page where it joins your home network. And then from there, it sets up with Chamberlain's website and lets you connect using their MyQ app, which is available for iOS and Android. I don't know if it's available for a Windows phone or not. And then from this app, you can monitor the status of your garage door. It'll show you if it's open, if it's closed, how long it's been open or closed, the last time it was open or closed, and you can open and close it. It's also pretty cool because you can set up notifications and rules. So you can say, oh, you know, I go to work. I'm out of the house by 8 a.m. every day and I'm home by 5. So from 8:15 to 4:50 Monday through Friday, if the garage door opens or closes, I want a notification. And, you know, it will send you a text and a push notification to the app, and it'll go, hey, your garage door was opened at 9:15. And you go, huh, I wonder what's going on. Or if you have, maybe someone coming over to do some work or drop something off, you could say, hey, just call me when you get to my house. And that way you don't have to give them a code to your door or anything like that. You can they can give you a call, and then when they're in the driveway, you just hit the button on your app and it'll open right up. And so it is really neat. If you are in the market for a garage door opener or thinking about getting one, I really can recommend these MyQ garage door openers. And you might be in luck if you have a newish Chamberlain. I think MyQ is actually specific to them. But if you have a newish one, you may actually be able to buy an internet gateway for, I believe it's like $47, just under $50. And you might be able to Wi-Fi enable it with this little add-on gateway. So something else to look into. I have a little garage out, or a camera out in the garage, which I put there because I'm scatterbrained, and sometimes I wouldn't know if I remember to close the garage door. So I was showing it off to some friends and was able to pull up the camera and then switch over to the app and hit the open button and then jump back to the camera and show them opening and closing when I was 30 miles away. And they thought that was all really cool. And I admit that is really cool. So that is what I love. Go check it out. Like I said, if you are in the market or think you might be, or even have a newish one, you might be able to Wi-Fi enable it. It's very, very neat. All right, well, Jeff is not with me to wrap it up, but I will wrap it up myself. I want to thank all of our patrons, Carl, Dennis, Jamie, Jeffrey, Jimmy, John, Kai, Scott, and Todd. Thank you so much, guys, for supporting the show. We really appreciate it. You have just listened to another fine episode of the No Better Than Average podcast. We would love if you give us a call on our call-in comment line. That number, as always, is 317-643-1212. You can leave us a question. You can rant. You can just tell us about something that you're interested in, and we will be happy to follow up on it and talk about it on an upcoming show. You can follow us on Twitter at No Better Show. You can go to our blog, www.nobettershow.com. We would love if you would send us an email. We read them all, and if you're interesting, we will read it on the air and make you internet famous. That email address is feedback@nobettershow.com. If you love the show, we would really appreciate it if you would tell your friends, tell your podcast listening friends, tell your non-podcast listening friends, and get them to become podcast listening friends. And, you know, as always, subscribe, rate, and leave a review on iTunes. That really helps us continue to grow. Those stars and reviews goes a long way towards helping us out. Like I said, you've just listened to an episode of the Know Better Than Average podcast, so now you should know better than average too. I hope you guys have a great week. Stay warm if you're on the East Coast. Hope you get rid of all of that snow. Thanks for listening, and we will be back again next week. Bye, everybody. Jeff and I both know we have the most awesome fans on the whole internet, and awesome fans join the Know Better newsletter. It's free, it's fast, and we promise we will not abuse your information. Plus, you'll get the latest info on the show, drawings and giveaways, and cool announcements. Join today at knowbettershow.com/join. What are you waiting for? knowbettershow.com/join.